Welcome to On the Edge with April Mahoney Brains. Here, this is the spot where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. Welcome home, brains. There's only one requirement to hang out on the edge, is that you open your big brain and close your small mind. Did you bring your thinking caps? It's time to put them on, because the conversation starts
Carol Laurie,
now.
I have your express authorization to record, edit, and distribute this podcast on your behalf and on behalf of On the Edge with April Mahoney and ALM Enterprise.
Absolutely, yes.
All right. What were you doing this morning before we got together, Carol? How'd you start your day?
I made my tincture drink. I made my husband breakfast. I watered my garden and did a little meditation, and here we are.
Wow, look at you. And it's not even 10 o'clock. Well, no, it's 10:30 here in California.
Yes.
Now, where are you at again? You're in Northern California.
Yes, I'm in the San Francisco Bay Area, Berkeley, actually.
Wow, pretty moving and liberating up there, but it's pricey, it's expensive.
We're not even going to discuss it. It's ridiculous.
I don't know how people live.
No.
I don't know how they live. It's crazy. No.
Yeah.
So you said you made a tincture drink?
A tincture. Tincture. I take my herbal tinctures and I put hot water in it and I drink it as tea. And that's one of the things that I recommend women with breast cancer do. Makes a really big difference in how you start your day. The metabolic messaging you're giving your body for the day begins with the first thing that you eat. So if you start with coffee and a donut or pastry, it's about sugar and carbohydrates, which feed inflammation. They feed cancer. We want to get away from that. We want to go towards health.
Well, you know what? And I do that. Sometimes I will walk into the kitchen and I pick up the chips, the first thing. So I won't do that anymore. I won't do that anymore because Carol Laurie told me not to. Brains. Welcome to On the Edge with April Mahoney. You know where you are. You are at the spot where the conversation is pointed. The guests are sharp. The responses are never dull. And we are talking about our breasts and our overall health with Carol Laurie. Carol Laurie is an amazing woman and she's a fireball. So you better get ready. Okay.
Yeah.
She gives it to you straight with no chaser. Okay. And so I appreciate that. She's a naturopath. I'm going to ask her what that means. A licensed acupuncturist. I love to get the needles in me.
Oh, good.
Homeopath and homeopathic medicine, functional medicine practitioner. But she's got a special desire to work with women that are going through the breast cancer journey. Now, we're not talking about pre, because we're going to talk a little bit about that. We're not going to talk about post. We're going to talk about the totality of what this means and how it can go into other parts of the body. And we're also going to talk to my sister brains, the disparity healthcare in African-American and Latino women.
Very upsetting.
Why that is. It is very upsetting.
Not okay with me.
It's not okay with me either. So let's take it from the top. How are you today? You said that you're absolutely wonderful. You got your day started. You went and made breakfast and watered your plants and all that kind of stuff. But where did your journey begin? How did you start doing all these different modalities with regards to healthcare?
Well, I was always interested in what made people well and what made them sick. I don't know exactly why. It's just sort of what I was born with. My granny had what I now know to be post-polio syndrome. And she was bent over and she had trouble walking. And maybe that was the beginning of it. But I was going to go to medical school and my life got, quote, what I thought derailed. I ended up working with a doctor in Alito Beach, Jones Beach, Long Island in the 70s. And my roommate at the time had cancer. And I was with her when she went to the Memorial Sloan Hospital. And the doctor said to her, there's nothing more we can do for you, basically. And you're going to die at some point. And she said, no, I'm not. I'm in my 20s. And she found this chiropractor who did detoxifying diets using iridology. Now, you need to understand that in 1976, the word detoxifying was not the common word that it is now. Nobody really knew what that meant. and nobody knew about iridology, which is the study of using the eye markers to determine where you have toxins in your body.
Oh, I've had that done when I was in Beijing, China.
Oh,
I went and saw a doctor, and he checked my liver, my kidney, and my spleen, looked at my tongue and my eyes.
Yeah, that's part of Oriental medicine, Chinese medicine diagnosis, awesome. Which as an acupuncturist, I use.
Awesome.
So I started working with this doctor. And just to let you know how naive I was, a young girl came in. She had really bad skin. And in my mind, I'm thinking, why is she here? You have bad skin. You take antibiotics. What's the big deal? But she came back a month later. Her skin was better. She had lost weight. And he treated people who had either not been helped by the medical profession or who had unfortunately been harmed. And I got an up close, really, education about the beauty and the power of natural healing, because month after month, these people came in, they were juicing, they were doing blended salads, they were eating a very specific way, and they got miraculously better in ways that I now know would have not been possible through regular allopathic or medical care. And one day I was going through a pile of papers, which we all tend to have on our desk, and there was a catalog to the National College of Naturopathic Medicine. And it was like the bells went off. And I thought, oh, maybe I should go here. So I ended up going there for 4 years in Portland, Oregon. And then I moved to California and got my acupuncture license. Mm. And I'm, you know, I was always interested in homeopathy, which is its own science and its own method of healing and working with people's illness. And I've been doing that for over 30 years. And nutrition. So you need to incorporate the whole person as well as the emotional component of illness.
Absolutely.
When you're dealing with chronic disease. Yes.
You know, it's, I was about to sign myself into this wellness clinic here in San Diego. And
there's a lot of them in San Diego.
Yeah. And this one was supposed to be state of the art, but you know what? Me being naive, I'm thinking that this is like almost a 5-star resort. You know, you're going to go
should
in.
Be. Should be nice. Should be
well,
nice.
It was a different experience. Okay. Everything on the website looked great. When I got there, it was a totally different experience because they are doing a lot of detoxification for individuals that have cancer and other diseases. Mm-hmm. And I looked at the diet. It was like wheat germ. And there's no television. There's no,
right. That's it's fine. A total detox from your life.
These people were very, very, very sick. And I was thinking I was going somewhere that I was going to get massages and maybe get a colonic and, you know, have some classes and this, that, and the other. There was really an awakening. So detoxification was also scary for me because I've done it before and I got sick. Well, maybe I got sick because you got to go through that process of getting all of the toxins out and then rebuilding.
No. I've done the doctor was an expert in detoxification, and you really need to understand you don't want to go too fast with somebody who's never done it before. You need to know how to start it. You need to know how to stop it. Mm-hmm. How you stop it is as important as how you start it. Mm-hmm. And you need to follow the person's body's clues about when they've had enough.
Mm.
So there's not like
I went in and did it and had a steak right after, and I thought, right after, maybe like 3 or 4 days, I did not reintroduce food or my quote unquote diet. And so you have to know what you're doing, and you need to have a trained facilitator. Give us a couple suggestions on just basic things. I know that we should eliminate a couple times a day. We should eat plenty of fruits and vegetables, but give us some other tips to start to really kind of look at our body and start detoxifying.
Okay. Well, let's just start with looking at your body and start being healthy, because detoxifying is another level of what we eat and what we eliminate from our diet. And unfortunately in America, we have been brainwashed, and the standard American diet, the initials of which are SAD, S-A-D, not only is it sad, it's also dangerous. It quadruples the cancer rate, quadruples. Oh. And it increases cardiovascular disease, hypertension, diabetes, especially in the African-American community. And So we really need to become what I call empowered about what we're putting into our shopping cart. And when you go, I never go to a regular Safeway, but I was there buying, I think, aluminum foil. And there was this young woman with her little baby and her three-year-old, and she had her cart filled for the week of what she thought was really healthy food. And of course, there were those little orange fish that we all grew up with for the kids, and boxed cereal and cow's milk and this sugar and that carbohydrate cookie. And I didn't say anything to her, but I'm thinking this is the beginning of why people are sick. I mean, every single thing in that cart was in a box. And when you purchase, when you use your hard-earned money to purchase things in a bag or a box, you have removed yourself from what is live food. And you're now, they, in order to make those products, the crackers, the cereal is like eating paper with milk on it. I mean, it's like eating cardboard. It has nothing to do with grains and nutrients like steel cut oats, organic steel cut oats. That's real fiber. That's real B complex vitamins. They take everything out and then they have to put it back in. And they have to add a lot of chemicals so it doesn't deteriorate while it's sitting in the box on your shelf.
And then we're not even talking about how it was genetically modified.
No, we haven't even started with that yet. So, and, you know, I really want people to know when they say to me, oh, I can't afford to eat organic. It's like, do a test. Go down and put every single thing that you buy from the regular store, your sodas, your box cereals, your, you know, pre-made this, your pre-made that, and then add it up and then go to the health food store. And you're not going to be drinking sodas anymore. I mean, I don't even know how much a six pack of soda costs, or, and you're not eating those potato chips. I mean, just switching over, it's not more money because you're using what your budget to buy healthier food.
And I get that, Carol, but you know what? Food and junk food sometimes is a guilty pleasure. The ice cream, the cookie. And I mean, I understand not in excess. You should live to, you should eat to live and not live to eat. Totally get that. Okay. But there are certain things that we want to incorporate in our diet that we don't want to totally extract.
Right.
So I don't want to, you know, because me, I'm on a program right now. I'm really watching what I eat. I shop the outer perimeter of the grocery store. I'm so proud of myself.
Right. That's a good way of looking at it. Yeah.
I looked down that cookie aisle and it said, and I said,
right.
No, I didn't. I resisted it. But I did give myself, you know, a little something because I need to get the edge off. And sugar is, you know, it's a treat. It's a poison. It's a drug. I get all that. But it's also good.
We have to agree to disagree. If you have a serious disease, if you have a metabolic disease such as diabetes or hypertension or, you know, colon problems or elimination problems or even depression, sugar is a contributing factor.
Mm.
So, yes, that's great that you resisted the no of the cookie aisle. But also, it's like, we need to resist the potato chip and the chip aisle, and we need to resist the soda aisle because the standard American diet and the Pop-Tart aisle, I mean, has raised us from the very beginning to have a sugar processed food, carbohydrate centered processed food plan. And that is why everyone is ill. And there's lots of research to back this up. There's been a study about the Mediterranean diet. They used like 200,000 people over 20 years or 25 years. And also the Japanese culture before it became Americanized.
Absolutely.
Both of those cultures, they've been studied. And, you know, all this biochemical and the blood work and the heart disease and the breast cancer and the cardiovascular disease, lung cancer, colon cancer. And those cultures have very low cancer rates, very, especially the Mediterranean, very low cardiovascular disease, very low heart rates, heart attack rates. As the Japanese culture became more Americanized, they had very low breast cancer. Their breast cancer rates quadrupled and went way up. The people who do the Mediterranean style diet, which is so much healthier than what we've been brainwashed through American advertising. They have less cardiovascular disease, less obesity, less diabetes, less hypertension, less colon and lung and breast cancer. So there is research. So it's not, you know, the word you used in front of the word pleasure was guilty. Yeah, I'm not into the guilt.
Oh, well, I know. I know. All right. So we're talking about culture. Let's jump right into it. Let's talk about the health disparities in brown people. We can talk about Native American. We can talk about African American. We can talk about Africans, because it is a difference. We can talk about Hispanic, but the cultural difference. And I can attest for African Americans, it is our eating. We want it fried. We want it, you know, we want the gravy. We want the sugar on the yams. We want the cornbread. All of that. It was a culture of a comfort type of thing. But we have to change, because we are the ones that are really suffering.
So let's talk about that. One of the reasons I'm work with women is because in my family, the feminine was disparaged. And whether the color of your skin doesn't matter, it's that you're a woman. And I am out to help women. My mission is to help women have the highest level of health and care that they can. So it's about empowerment. Now, the African American culture with the history of slavery is so complicated, because the food is connected, you eat. The food is connected to your horrible history in the past.
The chitlins, we got the pig intestines and their feet, and you know, the lard and all. Yeah, absolutely.
Now, if you eat lard, like, and you're super active and you don't eat a lot of it, then it has a different biochemistry in your body than if you eat it and you're sitting at a computer or a desk all the time. I think what you do with pig's feet is you boil them, right, with spices and herbs, and then you separate the fat out, or do you fry them?
I don't know. I've never eaten a pig's hoof. I looked at it.
My understanding is that you boil them.
They say they boil them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then you
take out the meat. I don't think pork is a bad meat if you're not eating all that fat. I mean, you know, you take that and you have it with some beans on the side, and I don't feel like that's a bad way of, or unhealthy way of eating. I think it is possible to change what your cultural food is to a healthier version of itself. And we all need to do that. And I'm a believer that we should be eating our culture. So Asian people, their genetics match the Asian diet, but they match the Asian diet in a healthier version, not in what the American standard diet has turned it into. So
they eat carbs. I mean, they eat rice with every meal, but it doesn't seem to,
they are also getting into trouble with diabetes and cardiovascular disease. The issue is, before we became industrialized, they were eating it and they were walking in the rice fields, or they were walking miles and they were biking, and the air wasn't toxic. And so they move over here and they adopt the American lifestyle, and they're eating rice like they used to 100 years ago. And their genetics of their body can't keep up with what they're eating now. And that's why they are also suffering from the effects of the standard American diet, diabetes, cardiovascular disease, and hypertension and obesity. So it's across the board. The lifestyle, the standard American diet and the standard American lifestyle of sitting in the computer and not moving and not walking and getting in the car, as opposed to walking a mile to the grocery store and back. Absolutely. I mean, it's impacting all of us.
Absolutely. So jump a little bit forward as to what you're seeing as far as care and the disparity in care when it comes to, women with breast cancer and women of minority
color. Yeah, minority women. Well, I think minority women across the board have a disparaged against care, because many people don't have insurance. There can be a language barrier. They can't get time off from work to go to the doctor. There is no regular follow-up. They need to get, this is such a complicated topic. They need to get hooked up within their communities with a clinic that speaks their language, that's open in the evenings and maybe on the weekends, so they have access to care. And unfortunately, a lot of people are using the emergency room for this when, right now the emergency rooms are overloaded with treating people who are ill with the pandemic. So it's such a complicated topic.
But it's also awareness. It's also fear, because I'm going to tell you, African-Americans have been used as lab rats. You know, and this is what I found was interesting when they came out with the first vaccine trials. Where do they want to go? They want to go to Africa and they want to go to India. That's where they want to try it on the people. You know, we know what happened to Tuskegee. We know what happened to Native Americans.
Yeah.
And so our culture is very reserved. We're standoffish. We're not trustworthy because you got this white doctor.
I can't blame you.
With a syringe and says, hey, you know, this is what you want to do. My mother had a hysterectomy. She was never told why she had that hysterectomy.
No, in those days, the standard of care, whether you were black or white, was to give women hysterectomies. I remember working in the hospital and there was a room filled with white women in their 40s, and they hit 40 and everybody had a hysterectomy.
It was crazy.
I mean, that was what they did in, 1990 or 1983 or five. I mean, it was before that, in the 70s. It was in the 70s. I'm losing track of my time. When women became perimenopausal, the gynecologist just gave everybody hysterectomies. It was a horrible time.
And they were looking at research. They were collecting data. And that is what they do. And so we are reserved. You don't see a lot of blood drives in the prominent African-American community. You don't see us donate organs. You don't see us do bone marrow testing because we don't trust. And there's a level of ignorance. Ignorance only means not knowing. It doesn't mean that you're stupid.
It means that the medical community hasn't taken responsibility for outreach and education. And I know that recently, I'm from Philadelphia, and there is at Temple University Medical School, there is a beautiful African-American woman doctor who gathered all these students around her, and they went directly into the Black community in Philadelphia. And there's quite a large Black community in Philadelphia. And they have, unfortunately, the children there have one of the highest diabetes rates in the country. And that is specifically because there's deficient access to healthy food, which is one of the things that I would like to change. But she went into the community and had a vaccine drive because of what you're saying, that the Black community didn't trust the white doctors. And I think that that is a valid concern, and I want to be respectful of that.
Right. But this is something else that annoyed me. The very first person that you saw get the vaccine on television, I watched very carefully, was a Black doctor giving it to a Black person. Not that, you know, it did make a significant imprint in my mind, because it says, okay, we're testing on you. You are going to be the prototype. But that's not to say that science and research is very valuable, Brains. We need to get out there. We need to be involved in trials, case studies. We need to work with homeopathic medicine to actually understand what it is, because we are indigenous people. We are people of this earth. We are the original people on the planet. Yes. And so there has to be research. And if we don't participate, we're at a disadvantage when it comes to medical science, research, and advancement. Wouldn't you agree, Carol?
Absolutely, I agree. And I know that in the world of breast cancer, which is an area that I focus on, the changes in the last 25 years have been enormous, and how they're now better able to target specifically the type of breast cancer and the tumor. And I think that 25 years from now, it's going to be much more oriented towards immunotherapy, meaning the cancer treatment is going to match the genetic and genomic markers of the woman's breast cancer. And wow. That's what we need. We need more individualized care across the board so that people can get what they need and not be victims of this disease.
But also understanding the original origin, because sometimes that tumor or that cancer did not start in the breast. It could have started in the colon. It could have in the lymph nodes. It could have started in the thyroid. And this is what they're treating. So they're treating you for breast cancer, but you also have these other contributing factors. Tell us a little bit about the work that you're doing with women in breast cancer.
Well, let me just back up. I mean, if a woman comes in and she has an abnormal mammogram, let's say that's how it's discovered, they'll do a biopsy and they'll get markers on that breast cancer tumor. But if they think that there's metastasis or there is some indication that it's not primarily breast cancer, that it came from colon cancer or ovarian cancer first and then spread to the breast, they'll be able to find that out. So, you know, I think that you need to make sure you're being treated, if at all possible, at a major university hospital. And I encourage the people that I work with, the women that I work, to be, you know, really assertive in the questions that they ask. And I have this whole part of my online program that I've created to empower women, you know, 10 questions to ask your oncologist. And if your oncologist can't answer them, or if the assistant or the nurse practitioner can't answer them, it needs to get to the next level, because it's your life that you're dealing with. And you have the right to understand what is happening to you and why, and what the treatment is and what the side effects are going to be, and be an active participant in every decision that's being made for your health.
As you progress and you have went through chemotherapy, radiation, you've had your breasts removed, you've had reconstructive surgery, there's always the fear that it's going to come back. What do you suggest that women do to try to maintain this level of health and awareness moving forward?
Well, I think that is a very valid concern. I asked my community of over 10,000 women, since your diagnosis, what is your number one concern or fear? And 80% said, I don't want it to come back. So even from the minute that a woman is diagnosed, she's already moved on to the, is it going to come back? Mm-hmm. And I have a whole 6-step program that we work with, which I'm happy to share with you and your community. And the first step is to reduce the inflammation. Inflammation feeds and fuels all illness, whether it's breast cancer or thyroid problems or overweight or cardiovascular disease. Inflammation is always a contributing factor. And you're thinking, well, how do I reduce inflammation? You change what you eat. You make sure that you're not spending your hard-earned money on toxic home care and self-care products. I had a 35-year-old woman come into my practice, and she had the diagnosis of, quote, unexplained infertility. And I love it when somebody has an unexplained illness diagnosis, because I think there is always a reason. There just hasn't been the right, maybe, functional medicine testing. And she had on enough perfume that I felt like I was walking through Macy's, the ground floor. It was so bad. And I have a scent-free office. And I said to her, so tell me about scents. She goes, oh, I love scents. I have the plug-ins in the wall. I have those stick things in oil. And then this is the killer for me. I spray my sofa with that product and the hair is standing up. And I said to her, so when you go home, gather every single thing that you're using and put it on the counter and take a picture and send it to me. 29 items.
Wow. So, well, I love scents too.
Okay. For me,
but I use natural oils.
Yes, I know. You sent me some. Oh. They're beautiful. I love that. I gave one of those to my daughter. I kept one for myself and shared one.
Oh, good. I'm glad that it was, you know, within the standards.
No, oh, really, yeah. It was very nice.
But the alcohol, I understand the alcohol and the perfume and all that, and the chemicals. Right. But the topicals too, the lotions that you're putting on, the hair products, the hair dye, all that is toxic.
So let me explain to the audience. Those chemicals, those products have chemicals which are called estrogen disruptors. Mm. So when we have estrogen in our body, we have healthy estrogen, it's used, it's broken down, and then it's excreted in our urine and feces. And until it's excreted, it sits there sort of like in a parking garage, and then it needs to be bound to be removed. So those chemicals in those 29 products, laundry detergent, dryer sheets, stuff you put on your face, your skin absorbs everything. You come out of the shower and your pores are open. You wrap yourself in a towel that's been in a dryer sheet. And it's like all those chemicals go right into your body. So when you use those chemicals, they get into the parking garage, so to speak. And the binding facility that is looking to bind with the healthy estrogen says, oh, well, here I am. Come on over here. Bind with me. Because they look alike, right? Mm-hmm. And then the real estrogen goes into the parking garage and all the parking spots have been taken up with the fake chemicals. And that turns the healthy estrogen into an unhealthy form of itself called estrone. And that leads into something called estrogen dominance, can lead to polycystic ovarian syndrome, infertility, irregular periods, bad cramping, and breast cancer. It's just to begin with, inflammation, Hashimoto's, the whole thing. So I encourage everybody to do what I asked this lovely woman to do, which is gather everything on your countertop and look at what you're spending your money on and what you're putting. You have 100% control over what's in your house. Mm-hmm. Stop buying those products and go to the health food store and buy the eco version of also dishwashing liquid. Your hands are wet. You're washing the dishes and all those chemicals, that blue stuff that we all use. I used to use it. I don't use it anymore. So as you're finishing up what you have, buy a healthier version. And she had to throw out her sofa because we couldn't detoxify it from that spray stuff. Very serious problem. And she got pregnant 3 months later. She was about to spend $40,000 on IVF and it didn't take long. She didn't need to do that.
That's amazing. That's one thing. So what else can women with breast cancer do to really kind of keep themselves focused? It's mindset, it's meditation. And understand also too, Brains, that a homeopathic or integrative medicine, those take time. They are a lifestyle change. It's not a quick fix. It's not like taking a pill or taking an injection or getting it cut out and hoping that it heals right away. This is a lifestyle change. Wouldn't you agree, Carol?
Absolutely. I think that's a really good point, and I'm glad that you mentioned it. Part of the American advertising of quick fixes, and I talk about two commercials which drive me crazy. A woman is depressed. She takes a pill, and the next scene, she is serving her family a picnic lunch. And I'm like yelling at the TV, why is the woman serving the lunch? Why isn't her partner doing it? And then the second one is for bipolar disorder, and there's a slice of the house, and it's a quote, a mess, quote unquote, the dishes, the laundry, the beds. And I'm screaming at the TV thinking, why is this the woman's job? I mean, why isn't it her partner's responsibility also? So she's not able to do it because she has bipolar disorder. And then she takes a pill and next thing you know, everything's, the dishes are done, the beds are made, the house is clean. The messaging for women is really distorted here. So it's the same thing applies to breast cancer. Yes, you have a lump. You've either had a lumpectomy or you've had one or two breasts removed, which is a trauma in itself. Many women are deciding not to do breast implants because that's a whole nother topic. Breast implant illness is real. And they get maybe some reconstruction. But breast cancer is a metabolic disease. And what that means is that you have the ability to either have your body promote cancer or make your body inhospitable to cancer regrowth. It's not as clear cut as the doctors say when you ring the bell and you're done. Yes, you finished active treatment. Maybe you're put on tamoxifen or aromatase inhibitor to block the estrogen, but then it's your job.
I don't know. Okay, we'll cut that out and I'll bring you back in on the count of three and you'll continue with that. One, two, three.
And how you want to bring your body back in to cancer, to make your body inhospitable to cancer regrowth, is through the six steps. We started with, you know, reducing your inflammation, creating a toxin-free home, as I just mentioned, changing what you eat. And if you go to my website, KirillLaurie.com, there's a free download there for healthy eating with breast cancer. You're all more than welcome to get that. I've spent a lot of time doing this research. And the key is the food needs to be delicious, not just for you, but for everyone in your family. Because I don't think a woman should have to cook one way for herself and another way for the rest of the family. You want the whole family to be healthy. This food is delicious. You're not going to feel deprived. And it works to keep everyone, including yourself, healthy. So you want to change your diet, and then you want to take certain supplements. And I have a whole program on what supplements are the most important. And like vitamin D, everybody's been hearing about vitamin D. It's so important to keep you healthy in the winter with the flu. Now, if you're taking vitamin D, you don't want to buy it from Trader Joe's, Costco, or CVS. You want to make sure that you're getting a vitamin D that's been third-party tested and made to pharmaceutical quality standards. And I have a whole program and a whole way for you to order supplements, and they send it to you directly, even if you just get vitamin D and zinc and maybe mushroom immune support. Those three things can make a really big difference in how you take care of your health.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of people, really quickly, in the African-American community are suffering with diabetes. Everyone in my family, single one in my family is a diabetic. Uh-huh. And so they're looking at your A1C.
Hemoglobin A1C.
So they're looking at that, and you get to a certain point, and the first thing they want to do is put you on pills.
Yeah,
my numbers or anything were fine, but they're saying, okay, well, your numbers are creasing up. Let's go ahead and give you that. So what I'm trying to do is metformin. What I'm trying to do is avoid that. I saw how my mother lived for years taking insulin injections, which now they are, science and research is trying to do a nostril spray.
Yeah, there is the spray.
Right,
yeah.
Instead of the injection. But still, who wants to have to edit and filter their glucose and test themselves every day when we can do something that is preventative? So really look at your diet, Bray. I know we're used to eating, but I look at it like this. When you were a baby, you only had milk. Then you got introduced to solid foods. Then you got introduced to junk foods. And so you have to go back. You have to change and go to the purest form that is best for your body. It's just what they say, once an adult, twice a child. You just want to regress backwards, and it's okay. There's plenty of foods. There's a plethora of foods out there to eat. I went to a vegan restaurant yesterday.
Oh.
I brought back something from my husband, and he goes, where did you go? To our favorite sushi restaurant, or did you go to that fake food place? And I'm like, it is so good, you would never know. But let me ask a question. When they say plant-based, what is that? Is that soy? Is that beans? What do they mean by plant-based? Because I had some plant-based shrimp that was delicious.
You did have plant-based shrimp? That's interesting. So a plant-based diet means that when you look at your plate, 7/8 or 6/8 of it are filled with vegetables.
Okay.
And vegetables are, you know, we have a big salad, maybe we have some root vegetables, and then maybe there's a little bit of protein, like 3 ounces of some protein, meaning tofu, real tofu, not the fake tofu, because fake tofu is a very unhealthy food. Real steamed tofu or tempeh or beans. as you mentioned. Now, beans aren't beans not cooked in a ham hock.
I am sorry to say.
Well, I know they're delicious.
You talked about the pig feet. That's what you season the beans with is the pig feet. I don't do it. I use smoked turkey.
Okay. Well, you know, the thing about smoked turkey is it has nitrates and nitrites in it, and they're carcinogenic. So if you can find smoked turkey that doesn't have those in it, plus not to mention the salt that's in there, I mean, you're turning a food into an unhealthy food if you're using those processed meats. And I'm glad that you brought that up. Processed meats are very carcinogenic. Smoked turkey, salami, bologna, ham, if it's not made properly, they're all bacon, sausage, filled with chemicals. Now it is possible you can go to Whole Foods and you can get uncured bacon. You can get, sausages that are not made with nitrates and nitrites, and they are not carcinogenic. It is possible to do that. But that way of eating, most people will have that kind of food with a potato and maybe some, a little bit of salad that's not real salad, that's fake salad with bottled dressing on it. You've like lost the nutrients that the plants give you. And our body, our cells need that.
Yeah, well, I'm a culprit. I do that. I had another guest on my show. She goes, you make a green smoothie and everything's wonderful. And then lunchtime, you go to a fast food restaurant. You've just defeated the purpose.
Yeah.
It has to be consistency. It has to be a lifestyle change, but it has to be good and it has to be fun. I love to cook. I love to be innovative in the kitchen. But another thing that I'd like to bring up is trickery. You go down these aisles, fat-free, sugar-free, organic. It is the buzzword. It is what is trending. It is what is marketable. It's what people are paying for. I don't know if it's truly organic. Yes, I'm paying more for it. Yes, it's separately packaged, but I really don't know how it is derived.
Yeah.
And just because you go to these high-end grocery stores, that doesn't make it the gospel.
It's true.
So what we really need to do is come home. I always wash my vegetables off with a little vinegar and water or that blue. I put a little dab of that little blue and get the wax off my cucumbers, get the wax off my apples before I consume them because it's full of stuff. And it's just so hard. Yeah, just a dab, just to clean off. Don't do it.
No.
Okay.
Sorry, honey. No.
All right.
You shouldn't even have that blue, and you shouldn't have that blue in the house.
Oh, I love Dawn. Dawn has done
no, no, no. Stuff. That's what I mentioned. It's filled with estrogen disruptors and chemicals. It's bad for you, and it's bad for the environment. Switch over to an eco version, please.
All right. Well, I will do.
And you don't want that on your food, honey. You don't want that on your food.
Well, I'm trying to get off the other stuff.
Well, then just go. When you go to a high-end store or a farmer's market, I'm a big proponent of farmer's market, and if it says organic apples, they have to be organic. They can't,
they don't not have to. No, I get it. I get what you're saying. But I really don't.
You don't trust that it's organic?
Not all the time. No, ma'am. Mm-hmm. I worked for a cosmetic company. I won't name the cosmetic company. They had a whole organic line.
I understand. They just put the word organic on the box.
And it's different.
There's a different level of investigation for food.
Okay.
And if something says CCOC, organic certified, they've gone through a lot to be able to say that. And at my farmer's market, which I'm going to be going to after we're done here, there are foods, there are people, and they're you get to talk to them, and some of them are not certified organic, but I'll say to them, do you spray? And they go, we can't get the organic certification. It's too expensive. It takes too long, but we are organic. We don't spray. So there is a difference, and I have no problem supporting those people, but I'm not going to eat sprayed food. And the worst culprit of sprayed food is strawberries, everyone. Strawberries have those little tiny pores. And when they spray them, it's like those pores go, oh, great, I get to absorb all these toxic chemicals. And then even when you wash them, those chemicals are still in those strawberries. And so you think you're doing something nice for yourself eating these strawberries. And basically, it's a vehicle for toxic chemicals. So please, only organic strawberries. It's very important.
Well, Carol, you have been such a wealth of information. I could talk to you for hours. Really, brains, I want you to take this seriously. Do the investigation, do the research. She's done it for years. There are a lot of women that are going to be diagnosed with breast cancer, that are recovering from breast cancer, or, you know, they have the BRCA gene and they're going to have to deal with that. So again, research, Black folks, it's time for us to wake up. Okay. We can't be scared. The information is out there. Do your due diligence. Find you a doctor that you trust, that you can ask the right questions. Be your own advocate. Go with the list of questions. There's no dumb question. Only dumb question is the one that you don't ask. You know, and check out alternative sources. If you are under a doctor's care, we want you to remain under that doctor's care.
Absolutely.
But also, what we want you to know is that there are alternative options and research that is done to help you enhance. And if you need to change options or change directions, know that there are wonderful, amazing, brilliant people like Carol right there that is able to help you and walk you through the process. Thank you so much. Please tell my brains how to get in contact with you. And I'm going to put all of your information at the back end of this interview as well in the show notes so that they can get the downloads that you have and work with you. This is so important.
So the easiest way to reach me is through my website. It's my name. Carol is the first name and Lori is spelled Lourie.com. And then use the contact me form and send me an email, send me a note. I respond to every email I get. It may take me a day or two, but I will respond. There's a lot of free downloads there for you. And if you are in breast cancer treatment, I have online programs for you that you can join. You can either just use the educational component or you can join one of my live group coaching programs. And if you feel like you need a referral to a different doctor, if you reach out to me, I will do my best to find you someone to work with.
You are a blessing to humanity, not just to women, because there's men that have breast cancer as well.
Yeah, and men have breast cancer, but that's not the person. Yeah, that's a whole different topic. I don't do that, but men do have breast cancer, and it's a sign that they can't metabolize their estrogen, and the estrogen can't get out of the parking garage because they're toxic. So there's a lot that men can do. They need to detoxify their gut. They need to change their environment in their home. We need to change how they eat. There's a lot that we can do for men with breast cancer. And most of the time, the men are obese. So they have too much estrogen floating around their bodies and they don't know how to break it down. So yes, there's a lot for men also.
Wow. Well, thank you so much for being here on The Edge. Again, brains, we need you to like, love, share this information, follow our guests, sign up and subscribe to On the Edge with April Mahoney on YouTube and LinkedIn and Twitter and Instagram and all the great places where all the information lies. Thank you so much, Carol Lori. I adore you.
Thank you for having me.
Bye, brains.